Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This Friday, the 2015 Solid Sound Festival will kick off at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts. The Music and Art Festival is curated by the rock band Wilco, a Grammy Award-winning group that has been trying to break your heart and loving you, baby, for 20 years. On Saturday, the Hunter Center at Mass MoCA will host John Hodgman's Big Time Comedy Thing with an astounding lineup of amazing comedy acts, including Hodgman himself, Tig Notaro, Jessica Williams, improv group Super Ego, and Paul F. Tompkins. And don't worry about comedy not working outdoors in the midday summer sun. The Hunter Center is inside and just perfect for stand-up, improv, and sketch.
So, I got a job at another video store, arrived there bitter, got a job at a video store, sitting there, back behind a counter, full of self-loathing, making it other people's problem. Just couldn't make this fun for myself anymore. So I started stealing. That really livened things up at the old workplace. Worked like a charm. I stole videotapes. I prided myself at the time that I only stole merchandise. I did not steal money from the register. I was no common thief, you see. I was a gentleman bandit. Stealing these wares and giving them to my friends. And it was all to get back at this store. Who had committed the sin of hiring me, right?
Paul F. Tompkins' career launched from writing and acting on HBO's Mr. Show with Bob and David. His television work includes hosting gigs and guest appearances on just about everything funny, and he's the host of the Dead Authors podcast, a new Earwolf podcast called Spontanea Nation, and regularly appears on Comedy Bang Bang and Thrilling Adventure Hour, among others. It's safe to call him a staple of the comedy podcast genre, which I'm here to assure you, if you don't know already, is a very real thing. He hosts No You Shut Up on Fusion. He joins us now, Paul F. Tompkins. Welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much.
Now, I am an enormous fan of yours. How do we talk about everything? How do we talk about everything we do? So I want to start with a pretty grabby topic from your recent work. You've just recorded a new stand-up special for Comedy Central called Crying and Driving. How long were you putting that together?
Oh, I would say probably I was collecting that material over the course of, almost 4 years, probably. I think I started working on that like a year after I got married in 2010. And, it was various stories from my life that I took a while to assemble and then take out on the road. So, almost 5 years.
And it sounds like, and obviously you just recorded it, so I haven't seen it yet. It sounds like it is, like you just mentioned, it is sort of thematic, and some of your previous stand-up shows have been that way too. Some stand-up comics have transitioned to doing a one-man show with a director that that they perform not just as stand-up but as an actual thing that, you know, jumps some level and calls it a play. Have you thought about doing that?
I have thought about doing that. I've done one-man shows in the past, and I think that the last couple of hours that I've done could really function that way. My style is rather theatrical to begin with, so it wouldn't be that big a leap, really.
Right.
Because they're stories, because it's personal stuff, it can tend to feel like that anyway. It would be interesting, I think, to do a sort of theatrical run and do the same material. That said, I have done it for, I did a run in London where I was doing 2 weeks in a row at a place called the Soho Theater, and it was a really great experience, but there is something about being the only person on stage for an hour, and that's the only voice that I get to hear, that sometimes gets a little boring for me. And this is, I've done stand-up for a really long time, and I'm at a turning point, I think, in my career where something needs to shake up. I think that I need to maybe evolve my subject matter again, or I need to just kind of figure out something else. Because as enjoyable as it is to connect with the audience on stage, once I'm on stage, I enjoy myself. But it's the work of paring the material down and going over it that I have found to be less interesting to me. I guess because it's the craft that I already know, and I've spent so much time lately doing improv in various media that is a very exciting thing to me right now. And the fact that you can just show up and do it and whatever happens, happens. And I think it's part of a larger exercise for me in being able to let go and being able to be okay with things that are not perfect and to be in the moment as much as possible. I'm having a difficult time reconciling both of those disciplines in my brain right now and in my heart.
Mm-hmm. You are a fantastic improviser.
Thank you.
When did you begin doing that, and was it daunting at first?
Oh, for sure. I would say probably the earliest version of any kind of improvising was, ad-libbing in stand-up. And mm-hmm. a big turning point for me was when I got I got a job on Mr. Show with Bob and David. That was my first big job in show business when I moved to Los Angeles.
Of course.
And for the live tapings, I would do the warm-up for the audience. And I very quickly burned through all of the material that I had at that time. And we were doing, multiple shows, and we were recording the shows twice a night, and there would be a lot of familiar faces in the audience. So I knew I couldn't just do the same stuff over and over again. And so out of necessity, I was improvising, ad-libbing, doing these sort of stream of consciousness monologues. And when it occurred to me, this is a thing that I could maybe do other places and not just because I have to in this arena, maybe I can, this is a skill that I can hone and use elsewhere. That was the beginnings of it. And then when podcasting came along and I started doing characters, that was another level of it. That was the next step. And then, eventually doing improv on stage with Super Ego and various other people here in Los Angeles that have invited me to do their improv shows and to do actual scenes and keep a narrative going. And that led to me starting my my latest podcast, which is all improv and my favorite kind, which is narrative improv, where you're telling one story as opposed to doing unrelated scenes.
And that podcast is, of course, Spontanea Nation. It's on the Earwolf network of podcasts. So
yes.
A million follow-ups. The first will be, well, not a million, but probably six. The
sure.
The first will be, there is a Mr. Show with Bob and David reunion coming out on Netflix that you guys have worked on already, called With Bob and David. It's announced that it's been 4 half-hour episodes with a hour-long making-of special. I realize,
yes,
of course, that it's not as if you haven't seen or worked with many, if not all, of your Mr. Show colleagues since 1998, but getting the gang back together, as it were, what was that like?
Oh, it's a totally different thing. It really is, like, even though, yeah, we've worked together, run into each other, seen each other so many times over the past couple of decades, it is still a completely surreal experience for us all to be in the same room at the same time, writing and performing sketches. I mean, there was a lot of, I can only speak for myself, there was a lot of fun that I had, but for the most part, it was really strange. It was a really strange thing. Because,
mm-hmm.
A lot of time had passed, and for me, I had gotten into so many different things. I had so many different jobs, and it was very difficult for me to get back into the idea of servicing someone else's vision, being a small part of a larger thing in that way. Because I've come to learn over the course of years, the thing I like doing the least is writing.
Mm-hmm.
And writing for, I barely like writing for myself, much less writing for someone else. I did not contribute any sketches to the new series. I just helped out, pitched in on the writing. Most of the stuff that's in the show will be stuff that Bob and David had from one place or another that never got produced and that we all worked on honing and punching up and everything. But that part of it, it was very difficult for me because I had such and will always have such affection for that team of people and for that experience in my life. And I owe, really do owe everything to it. That has had a lasting, it was more than just a foot in the door. It had a lasting impact on my career and my creativity.
All right, it's real simple. Paul here will ask you a yes or no question, and if you lie, a buzzer will sound and a light will go off.
Let's show him.
Oh, no, that's all right.
Oh, come on, we'll test it.
All right. What?
Okay, let's think of a good one. Have you ever dreamed of kissing your brother?
No.
So it's not a small thing to be back with that gang again and to be working with and for them. But it was a really strange experience that that I'm very glad that I had. I'm very, very glad that I had it, and I really do hope that people like the new stuff, and I think they will. The live audience was really into it, and I think we've accomplished something that is not just a reunion show, not just the same exact thing that we did before. It certainly has that same flavor and that same sensibility, but it's a new show.
Our guest is Paul F. Tompkins. He's performing as part of John Hodgman's Big Time Comedy Thing at the Solid Sound Festival at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts this coming weekend. In your answer about improvisation, you mentioned doing characters.
Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Ice-T.
Gary Marshall.
J.W. Stillwater. Gig Boss.
Should I be saying Werner?
I wish you would. It's my name.
Which you do on the Pod F. Tomcast. You do on Comedy Bang Bang all the time, both the podcast and the TV show, and numerous other places, some of which are famous people, Ice-T, Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, Werner Herzog, Gary Marshall, Cake Boss, and then other you know, made-up people, made up of your imagination and working with Scott Aukerman or whoever else you're improvising with. All of this you know. So the question is, where do the characters come from the first time they are born? And then how do you remember their story that you've told as you're telling it and keep it canonical?
the beginnings of my character work were when I hosted Best Week Ever on
VH1.
And a lot of times because we're commenting on pop culture stuff, a lot of times to mix it up, it would be more fun for me to play a character, to become the person that we were talking about and make a joke that way than just endless, you know, snarky one-liners. And so as that show was winding down, comedy, what was then called Comedy Death Ray, was starting with Scott Aukerman, and he asked me to come on the show and said, "You can do whatever you want. You can be yourself. You can be a character." And had he not said that, it never would have occurred to me to be a character. I never would have thought of taking those things, those people, out of the TV show and doing them anywhere else. So I owe a lot to Scott for putting that idea in my head. And I think the first one I did after that was Ice-T, maybe, which I had done on Best Week Ever. And so first I kind of plumbed all the characters that I'd done on Best Week Ever. And then when I was getting in that frame of mind, thinking like, well, who else could I do? Who else could I reasonably do? And you know, I'm under no illusions that my impressions are going to fool anyone. The idea is that they're caricatures of these people. They're suggestions of these people that exist really just to impose my own weird idea on top of them. Mm-hmm. You know, that here's this sort of character-y type person from real life, and what if they were bitten by a bug that gave them psychic powers, or what if this old septuagenarian TV producer and director was also a monster hunter, you know, that kind of thing. The fun of doing these voices with the weird things that I personally enjoy. And then after a while, you know, the canonical nature of it, which there were two canons. There was the canon that existed on my podcast, and then there was the separate canon that existed on Comedy Bang Bang. For the most part, they overlapped. But there was stuff that would happen on Comedy Bang Bang that I would not include in my podcast because it just got so crazy and it was so much to remember and it was it just got so out there that I let that be its own thing. But then the consequence of that was it began to be less fun to do the famous people, to do the actual people, because I had less control over them in a way, because they were real people that already had the real person backstory that I would use as the springboard with this other weird stuff layer on top. So then I thought, well, I just want to create people. I really, you know, one of my heroes is Andy Daly, who creates these amazing mm-hmm. characters. And people like Andy and James Adomian, who would make up people out of whole cloth. I thought, well, that's a way that you can really, it can be whatever you want it to be. The people can look however you want them to look. They can sound however you want them to sound. And things can change at any time if you wish. And so that was the inspiration for creating, you know, people like J.W. Stillwater, the weird vigilante from a made-up place in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Fanboats.
Yeah, he's a fanboat mechanic by day, vigilante hero by night.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's a thing that is still very new to me that I am still very eagerly exploring.
I want to ask you next about No You Shut Up, the Henson alternative show you host on Fusion. I was talking to interviewing David Javerbaum recently about his show that just opened on Broadway, and he attributes the success to Henson and also to you. He says it mightn't have flown, it wouldn't be what it is if you weren't who you are and so good at it. So I just wanted you to know that he said that about you. It seemed like
that's
a nice,
very nice to hear.
Compliment.
That's very nice to hear. Very grateful to DJ for giving me that job in the first place. You know, he that was not something I had auditioned for. He thought I could do it and asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said yes. So I'm eternally grateful to him for believing in me.
So for people who have not yet discovered what Fusion is or looked for the show on YouTube, could you tell us from your perspective what the show is?
The show is essentially, it's a roundtable current events discussion show that I host, and the panelists for the most part are puppets from the Henson Company. It's a very odd, absurd show, and it's only gotten more odd and absurd as it's gone on, particularly in the third season. The first couple seasons we were a 15-minute show, and pretty much a one-joke idea that it's fun to watch puppets yell and argue with each other, which, by the way, it 100% is.
Oh, no, that holds. Absolutely.
Yeah, to watch these weird creatures talking about actual issues, you know. So there was the fun of that, and then a lot of puns based on the characters. And that's a big DJ influence because he loves some puns. And then in the third season, we got to be a full half-hour show, and there was a new head of programming put in at Fusion, which is still a very new network. And this guy, Wade Beckett, said, make the show that you want to make. You have more time now. Really just make the show that you want to make. Make what you think is the best show. And so my producer, Nelson Walters, and I, you know, he and I worked together on Best Week Ever. And he moved out here from New York at a great time. And this all, like, kind of fell into place. And he was available. And so, you know, I brought him along for the ride for the first couple seasons. And then with DJ off doing other things, it really became our show. And we just really opened up the world of it. We brought in more human people to interact with the puppets. We had the puppeteers, who are all extremely gifted improvisers and performers. We had them appear as various characters as well as voicing the puppets. And it just got really strange in a way that was that's very silly.
Good evening. It's time for No You Shut Up, the show where we discuss the issues of the day until we grow too angry to discuss them any further. I'm your host, Paul F. Tompkins. With me tonight, she's a columnist and host of the conservative Christian podcast, Crosstalk, Star Schlesinger.
Thanks for having me here, Paul.
A world-renowned chimpthropologist, Cornelius Nugent.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, sir.
A hydroelectric mogul and self-help guru, his book, The 140-Hour Workweek, is on sale now, Wally Nevada.
Hold on. Hi there. Yeah.
And finally, he's an actor, a model, and a hot dog. Hot dog.
Hey, Paul. Good to be recurring on the series.
Okay. I strive always to not, in absurdity, alienate anyone and have people say, like, well, I just don't even know what this is. And they're now it's like a challenge to see if I can stand watching it, you know, which there are a lot of shows that that I've had that experience with where I've enjoyed it first. And then after a while, it's sort of like, are you trying to see if you can outlast me?
right.
as a viewer, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, it's very viewer friendly, and it's just silly, and you know, we're kind of making these under the radar satirical points about things. You know, it's not strident, but there's still a lot of satire in it about the state of the world, as well as just flat out just silliness that's going on.
I am speaking with you today because you will be at the Solid Sound Festival on Saturday, June 27th, performing in John yeah. Hodgman's Big Comedy Thing. You will be there. Also, your cohort's Super Ego will be there. Tell us about yeah. Super Ego, please.
Super Ego is a podcast and a performing collective, for lack of a better term. troupe, I guess you could say. I don't know. Troupe always conjures to mind way more people and...
Right, or like you're riding around in a wagon, which I don't think
yeah,
you are.
Yeah, exactly. and we're very stationary. it's an improv podcast where the improv is done in a studio, and then it's edited down into sketches. So it's all the hemming and hawing and the frumpering of improv that's cut out, and all the best stuff formed into sketches.
Mr. Jamila?
Yeah?
Are you going to sing a song to start the class like Mrs. Bronson does?
What kind of songs does she say?
Go tell Aunt Rhody.
Bile them cabbage down.
Darktown Strutter's ball.
Wind whispering through the cotton. Oh, Lord, hold steady, oh, Lord.
Alien versus Predator.
I discovered it on a message board for another podcast, and you know, somebody was posting recommendations. They said, you should check out Super Ego. It's improvised sketch, and I was very intrigued and went and listened to it, and I fell in love with it right away. I wrote to the guys via the contact info that they provided, and I've never done that before. And I wrote to them and said, hey, this is a really funny show, and because I was not aware of a lot of improv or sketch podcasting out there. They wrote back to me and said, hey, we're big fans. If you ever want to come and play with us, please do. So I did. I loved all those guys right away and ended up you know, performing with them a bunch. And then it became an inevitable thing that they would ask me to join the group. And so I joined a year or two ago, and it's been such a delight every single time. They're a great group of guys, and I really am so in love with performing with them. It's always fun. And they've been such great teachers for me for improv, because we do periodically we do live shows, and the directive in those live shows, the imperative is that you have to recreate the podcast but in front of an audience. So the sketches are all about the same length, but we have to get to the good stuff faster. We don't have the luxury of an audience-less room where we can just kind of stop, retake things if we want, you know, punch it up on the fly. Now it's like the audience is right there. This has to be good. Has to be a good, satisfying sketch, you know. And I would say that our success rate is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I would say so. You also do voice acting. You played Mr. Peanut Butter in the Netflix original series BoJack Horseman. You recur on Bob's Burgers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of fantastic stuff that I enjoy very much. Are there any special challenges or delights in doing voice work?
Voice work is the easiest and the hardest at the same time. Because the easiest, obviously, because you don't even have to take a shower to go do it. You know, you can just show up and you stand there and you read the lines off the page. The hard thing is, and it depends on who the director is, there are some people that let you have your own performance. But the nature of voiceover is that they get the lines many different ways. So at a certain point, you feel like you're not in control of your own performance anymore, because you've given every different shading of it possible.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel like, well, what am I bringing to this? You know, if I'm not bringing, now I don't feel as if I'm bringing any interpretation to this role. I'm literally just a warm body with a voice box that is being controlled, you know. So that part of it for me is somewhat dissatisfying when that happens. You know, the thing I love most about BoJack and something like Bob's Burgers, where I've got a show that I've gotten to provide a number of voices for,
mm-hmm.
is those table reads. Because of the table read, you are absolutely in control of your own performance, and you get to interact with the other performers. And those table reads for BoJack were really exciting because that show is such a strange show.
Oh, yeah.
And it's unique among animated shows, not just for adults, I think, but also for kids. It's a strangely emotional show, which I did not know when I signed on for it. And I discovered the type of show that it was to become as it unfolded, and week by week at those table reads. And when it started to take dramatic emotional turns, it was as surprising for me as it is for the viewer who is watching it. Moments like that, the things that I will really treasure are moments that I got to do some, just very briefly, some real acting with Allison Brie at those table reads, because we played boyfriend and girlfriend. And I really enjoyed that because she's amazing. And to get to play just for a moment these dramatic scenes with her was really wonderful.
I think it might be good for me to get out of L.A. for a little bit.
Sweetie, you know I support you, whatever you want to do, but you're not going to find what you're looking for in these awful, made-up places. The universe is a cruel, uncaring void. The key to being happy isn't to search for meaning. It's to just keep yourself busy with unimportant nonsense, and eventually, you'll be dead.
Well, I guess I can keep my options open.
Great!
You know, I'm so thankful to Raphael Bob Waksberg for including me in the show, and it's been such a great thing to be a part of. And, you know, like I don't get to do a lot of drama, and he made it as easy as possible to do so. I do shower, for the record. I do shower for the report.
Do you want to do more drama? Is that something that appeals?
Yes and no. I mean, the older I get, the less patience I have for the process of shooting things.
Okay.
Because there's not a lot of multi-camera dramas out there, which would be the most efficient way of getting things done. But you know, the older I get, the tedium of film work really bothers me. You know, I admire people who make a living doing drama because there is so much waiting around. You have to do things again and again and again. You've got to wait for the lighting. You have to hit your marks. You have to do, technically, there is so much involved for you as an actor. And I know that there are people who they relish that. That's one of the things that they really love about it, which I get. I get the pride of keeping all of that in your head, hitting your marks, you know, being aware of the lights, the cameras, and delivering a real solid emotional performance. I mean, that's hugely satisfying. That's hugely satisfying. However, the patience that is required of you to do that, it's a huge amount. And my hat is off to people who can do it, because I find it very difficult to do. It's also very difficult not to complain about it while it's happening. That's,
sure.
That's probably the biggest challenge.
Paul F. Tompkins, I am an enormous fan. You are an absolute delight to speak with.
You got it. Thank you.
Thanks for just, I mean, countless hours of guffaws, I think.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. I appreciate that.
Paul F. Tompkins will perform solo and with Superego in John Hodgman's Big Time Comedy Thing in the Hunter Center at Mass MoCA as part of the Solid Sound Festival this Saturday. Full lineup and schedule for the festival are available at solidsoundfestival.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.